lots of people would say saying yes, but is like a hand in the face. Okay. Why not try yes and? Take part of what they said and start to pivot it. Yes, and what if we did? Yes, and how about this? It's the simplest thing, but it does not allow the mind to close off. So there's lots of empathy inquiry tricks to use to help you be, frankly, more successful in meeting your objectives when you're interacting with other people as a single contributor.
Welcome to Conversations at Basecamp, the professional development podcast designed to help you confidently ascend the corporate climb. I'm Kim Havens.
And I'm Noah Reese, and we're the co-founders of Kahila, a digital platform providing leadership development for people on the rise.
This podcast is your exclusive look into our Basecamp for intentional career growth.
Each week, we'll dive into essential topics to master high-impact power skills, and we'll also decode leadership secrets and navigate game-changing trends to future-proof our careers.
So, whether you're a seasoned professional seeking to refine your approach to leadership development, or an ambitious person charting your course, Conversations at Basecamp empowers you with actionable insights and tangible takeaways.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Noah Reese, one of the co-founders of Kahila.
And I'm Kim Havens, the other co-founder.
We are delighted to have with us today, Carrie Francis. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you, Kim and Noah. It's really nice to be here with you. I'm really looking forward to our conversation as well.
Well, Carrie, obviously everyone has access to LinkedIn, but if you could give us a quick 60 to 90 seconds about you, that would be wonderful.
Awesome. So I've had a career in the consulting field with a number of organizations. And I like to say that I've really helped my clients or our clients work through controversy or crisis and navigate their future forward. And throughout the course of my career, I've had a pretty singular passion for helping women be successful. And that is really why I'm so pleased to be sitting with both of you and engaging with your teams.
Well, Carrie, we had an earlier conversation with you, and we know empathy was something that came up in that conversation, and would love to hear your thoughts on, you know, why do you believe empathy is such a crucial skill in the workplace?
It is. I mean, let's be clear. Relationships and connections in the workplace are incredibly important, particularly to navigate a career successfully. Empathy builds connections among people. It means that the people you are with are being listened to, they're being heard. Really, at the heart of it, it's seeing other people, it's walking in their shoes so that that builds respect and trust. And to be successful in the work environment, you need trust and respect. And frankly, whether it's your peers, so your coworkers, whether it's your boss or your boss's boss, or if you're working with contractors or vendors or third parties, building trust in a healthy relationship. I'm not saying all good, all kind relationship, but a healthy relationship will enable you to be successful and frankly, build trust and respect and followership among others. That's why I believe it's so important in the work environment.
I'd love to pull on that because we obviously completely agree with you, but there are plenty of examples of places where that doesn't occur or, you know, small teams where that's not happening. Could you give an example where you've seen the use of empathy or somebody maybe even understanding and learning about empathy and changing the way that they interact with a team or change their relationships in a workplace?
Yeah, gosh, I have so many examples. And maybe I'll pick on myself. I'll start with one. I had a former boss, male, which I've just said, who at the very beginning of the relationship taught me a lot. I learned a lot with him. And then it became really clear that he would take my work and give it to our clients and represent it as his own. And
a classic scenario.
Imagine how that made me feel. And we were working, our entire team was working with an outside coach to help us focus on business development. And the coach one time said to me, one-on-one, you know, Carrie, it's really interesting how I see you respond to Tom in meetings, which was my boss. And I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, every time he talks, you frown, you scowl, you look down, you look away. I said, it's crystal clear. You don't respect him. You don't like him. And he said, you know, tell me what that's about. So we had a good coaching session. And then he said, you need to make sure that you remove that disrespect from your face and then work on with Tom what it is that you want. And frankly, I wanted credit for my work. So it took me a long time to remove those facial expressions and disdain. I mean, I didn't trust him. I didn't like him.
I have no poker face. So I this resonates with me.
Yeah. But I also knew I had to get along with him or I had to go get another job, which is always an option, right? We have lots of choices that we can make. And at least one is to walk with our feet. So it took me a while to work on the facial expressions, bring them to neutral. And then I also began to understand really, because I started to think about like, why is Tom acting this way? What is it? And I realized, frankly, that he was very insecure, that he was trying to control because he wanted to have more success at the heart of it, which was why we were having these business development coaching sessions. And so I worked with him in my sort of timid way at first, but to say things like, you know, Tom, I understand that one of my roles is to help to make this entire team successful, which of course is you being the head of this team, make you successful. Let's talk about ways that we can work together to grow our business and to have direct access to clients. And really what I was saying is I wanted access to clients, but I was doing it in a way that recognized his motivation and behavior was about his lack of pride, his lack of confidence. And so sometimes being empathetic is trying to get at what people are all about and the why, and then to work with them on that. So that's one of my stories.
Oh, that's a great example because many people have a difficult manager and obviously getting credit, but understanding his perspective in that, that's pretty powerful.
I love your use of the word, I understand. You know, I think understanding is the heart of empathy at the end of the day. I want to pull on that a little bit more. As you are building a professional relationship, and I want to talk two scenarios, as someone's building a professional relationship with someone who's more senior than them, how could you use empathy to build that professional relationship with someone more senior than you? And then also as you're building a relationship with a client using business development, how can you use empathy to build that relationship?
Yeah. So in many ways, I think they're the same. And look, at the heart of it, if we're going to stay in the place where we are at, we need to be perceived and be successful. And that means that our boss has to believe that we are successful and that we are working with them, not against them. And so to me, it's all about getting to know them as a human being. We all have a variety of behaviors and we all have a variety of ways that we think and work. And so whether that can be a Myers-Briggs or colors or another type of program that really understands who we are as an individual, how we behave, how we figure out who your boss is, figure out who your client is. Like, what are the things that motivate them? Are they a pioneer in the sky? Somebody who has these brilliant ideas, always whiteboards, but can never get anything done? Or is your client very introverted, very close to the vest, almost like a guardian? And how do you get to know them? And so I'd say first, it's figuring out the right cadence of how do you get to know them? What's important to them in their career? How long have they been where they are? What are their objectives? What are they trying to achieve? And depending upon the personality of either the client or your boss, you work to frame it. So if your boss is a driver and, you know, only has 10 minutes for you, you don't spend those 10 minutes socializing and trying to get to know them. You ask a good question at the very beginning. You know, how did that meeting go last week where I helped prepare you? Whatever it is. Very pointed. And then say, here's the agenda that I thought we could work on, and jump right to it. If, on the other hand, your client is someone who likes to spend 55 minutes of the hour that you have with them socializing, you'll have to sort of work some of the socializing into their career, what they're trying to achieve. So it's an art form, really. It's an art form. You use that to get to know who they are. You listen. You listen. You really listen. And then you do all of the empathy tricks. You repeat back. I hear you saying. You observe their body language. Are they crossing their arms? Are they covering their mouth or fidgeting? You know, what is going on with them? And try and make sure that you're getting them to become more open and really giving you loads of information about who they are, what's important to them, what are their values, and using that to sort of figure out how you can work with them to help them achieve their objectives.
That's such good advice, because I can think of a couple clients just off the top of my head, and one is very much no interest in talking about, you know, her as a person. And, you know, she just wants to get to the point. She's very methodical. And then the other one, in a 30-minute meeting, will spend 27 of the minutes easily, if we let her, talking about nothing to do with work. And so yes. I think that's such good advice for our next call, to weave in her career goals as a way to achieve our goals at the same time in that conversation.
Well, what you're really talking about is being incredibly in tune with those people around you and recalibrating based on the different people, you know, in the room.
Yeah. You know, of course, there's this saying that says, if you want to be heard, you have to speak in the language of the person you want to listen. And so it's not compromising who we are as a person. It's not compromising our authentic self. What it's doing is allowing us to engage in other people in a successful manner. And so I think oftentimes, particularly with women, we equate empathy with personal. It's how we are with our friends. It's how we are with a family. And we don't need to be empathetic at work. And yet, in fact, being empathetic at work drives your career success.
That last bit of driving your career success. We know there are lots of managers who get into positions that have gotten there without empathy. Could you talk a little more about why? I mean, you've talked a lot about it, but as a leader, how important it is, or as maybe an early manager, to lean into this empathy and understanding your team in order to push your career farther?
So I'll give a couple of examples. The not so good Carrie, and then the better Carrie. One of the areas that I focused on for many, many, many years is forensic accounting. And these are large public company investigations. The company's in a crisis mode. Their financial statements are not timely filed. You know, the SEC, the NACD, everyone's in an uproar. The board's in an uproar. And so our team to conduct the investigation is under a tremendous amount of pressure. And frankly, early on as a leader of that, I was much of a driver and making sure that we were getting our stuff done on time. We worked weekends, long nights. And I had one of my team members who is actually a driver very much like this. And she had a really important personal trip coming up with her family. And she sat me down and she said, you know, Carrie, we all understand what our objectives are. She goes, I think that we should make sure that we're really looking at everybody's schedule and balancing that so we don't burn out. And for Caroline to say this to me was pretty impactful. And so I said, okay, tell me more. Tell me what you're thinking. And she had this great idea that we would sit down with this team, which was about 20 people. We created an Excel spreadsheet. I'm sure there's a better way to do it than that. And we went person by person by person for about a 3-month period, which is as far as we thought it was going to take us. And we plotted people who had a vacation that they really wanted to stick with, that had maybe some family plans or other things going on in their life. And we plotted that out. And what I would say is Caroline taught me a great deal of empathy, because not only did people get the time off that they wanted to, more importantly, the rest of the team was so happy to cover for them when they were gone, because they knew that their time was going to be honored. So it became this whole team empathy. Everyone felt like they were heard, that they were valued, and that their, in this case, it was their time off was protected, quite frankly. And after that point, I carried it forward on every one of my projects to make sure that we did have coverage. The lesson was to be empathetic and sit in other people's shoes, to listen to them and their concern, and then to be inclusive. You know, what everyone, we weren't just going to do it for one person. We were going to do it for everyone so that the whole team felt as a team and thrived. And there's so many more examples of ways to do that today when you're maybe not under that time crush, but it's, does the team understand the purpose of what they're trying to achieve? Does everyone understand everyone's role in that? And making sure that all the voices are heard. And that same sort of respect and empathetic behaviors, both as a leader and then as the team. It doesn't matter if you have a two-person team or maybe you're a single contributor, you're still working with others. What do you need from them? What do they need from you? If you want to be successful, you're going to have to be and demonstrate true empathy, not insincere empathy, but real empathy.
I heard you say three words that I think are such a powerful tactic for demonstrating empathy, which is tell me more. When Caroline shared her concerns with you, instead of getting defensive and saying, but we have client, you know, deliverables, you just said, tell me more. And if I was on the receiving end of tell me more, I would immediately feel my shoulders separate from my ears. And I would then lean into that conversation with that person and feel like they're making an effort to understand me, the heart of empathy. So I think tell me more is such an effective strategy. And I want to dig a little bit deeper because you talked about individual contributors. So can you share a little bit more, other than the tell me more brilliant strategy, a practical strategy for someone who is not necessarily in a leadership position for how to build empathy? Again, whether it's with their team or clients, laterally, vertically.
You named it. So those three little words, tell me more. And I want to just pivot a bit to why that's so important. It gives me time to think. So first of all, tell me more is back to the other person. We talked a little bit about tennis before. So it's back to them. I get a pause so I can both be listening, stop the mind from going and say, okay, where is this going? And I don't feel like I'm under pressure anymore. There's some other pivots that I think as a single contributor, you are always somehow working with other people, even if you're not necessarily managing a team. And again, you need things, you need information, you need data, you need somebody to do something before you can do your job, or you need somebody to review your work before it can be final. And so, or maybe you're working with contractors or a vendor, you do interact with other people. And so I think, you know, maybe the most simple thing is, what is our objective together? And then focusing on that as a team, even though it's maybe not a real team, it's still a team. You're still working with someone. Understanding expectations from them and understanding expectations from you, making sure that those are aligned. Pretty simple, but I'm sure the three of us have plenty of stories where I was certain I knew what the expectations were, but they didn't get met.
And would that be as explicit as asking somebody, what do you think is the most important thing of this project and making sure you're aligned?
Absolutely. And using curiosity and inquiry is super important in that. Do you have a sense of where we're heading? You know, what do you believe the timeline is, or what do you believe the timeline should be? What do you hope to get out of this? What do you think my boss hopes to get out of this? Or so many questions that you can frame. There's also different ways. Like if you hear something that you're not really sure is right, you can either say that, tell me more, or pause, use silence, or go, mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many little tricks just to get people to keep talking. If it's something that maybe is partially right, lots of people would say, saying yes, but is like a hand in the face. Okay. Why not try yes and? Take part of what they said and start to pivot it. Yes and what if we did? Yes and how about this? It's the simplest thing, but it does not allow the mind to close off. There's other little tricks if you really feel like, and they're not tricks, but they are tricks because you really have to think about using them. Someone's headed down the wrong path. And so instead of saying, maybe tell me more, you might say, and you depersonalize it from that person. You say, well, some people might think that that would be controversial. Or, and again, who's some people? Right. But it's not, I'm not saying, you know, gosh, I think that's controversial. And it's not saying I'm thinking you're controversial, but saying some people might find that difficult, or just saying, well, what do you think about this? So there's lots of empathy inquiry tricks to use to help you be, frankly, more successful in meeting your objectives when you're interacting with other people as a single contributor.
So most people, not everybody, but most people are still in a hybrid mode. Do you have any tricks or tactics for, again, working in a hybrid environment and weaving in empathy to those who maybe, you know, you're in the office sometimes, you're out of the office sometimes, those you might have people on your team who say, hey, I am going to stay completely remote. How do you work with that? Not just hybrid workspace, but like hybrid teams.
Well, I certainly have my own tricks. I will say that it is hard. Like if there's a general agreement, we're going to be in the office 2 days a week, I try and have intentional, purpose-filled interactions that are in person, not via Zoom or Teams or whatever it might be. And I try and use that to focus on the objectives of the team, a little bit of fun, maybe some bribes in there with a meal or coffees or donuts, whatever your team is about. And every team kind of has a vibe to it.
Donuts are universally loved, though.
And universally super bad for us.
Yes. Yeah.
But I really try and find what's our purpose when we get together in person, and to use that both in a one-on-one coaching way. So I will do one-on-one coaching sessions with the team during those in-person meetings, in addition to the teamwork, if you will. And certainly we are hybrid. We're not back really more than 2 or 3 days a week, and oftentimes less than that. And many times because our clients aren't back in person either. Generally for us, it's Fridays are cameras off, and people understand that. If for some reason we're having a call with a client, I will ask my team to please prepare, if they can, to have cameras on so we can engage with the client. They can see us. And I also make sure that, you know, because some people have two screens. I don't personally, but some people have two screens. And so they'll be looking at the screen while they're on the Zoom meeting. I will just ask them if they can shift that, so they're actually looking at the camera, so it appears as if they're engaging one-on-one. If for some reason you need to go off, just do the, you know, BRB, be right back, turn your camera off and go take care of that. Also, virtually. Some people talk a lot, talk fast, talk over other people, interrupt, and they make decisions. They assume that silence is agreement. And then you have others who are more thinkers. They think in their mind. They don't think out loud. They think in their mind. They like silence because silence is processing information. They oftentimes are the ones that will come back after the meeting and ask more questions. If you have a mix of that type of a team, or even if you're just one-on-one, you have to give those people the right amount of space. So for the thinkers, be silent, allow for silence for a moment or two, and then to go ahead and ask them directly, you know, I know that you're probably processing information. Are there any questions or items that come up immediately? After the end of the call, follow back up with them one-on-one. Maybe even with them, send some materials out in advance. Would you go ahead and take a look at this in advance and start to think about it so that when we get to the meeting, I can get your ideas that have been thought about? For the ones that talk really, really fast, maybe you want to ask them, hey, Carrie, hold on just a moment. Let's see if Neil or Susan or someone else has something to say. And there's lots of ways that you can make that work. I like to make sure if we're all virtual, I have people in gallery, assuming that we're not also doing a presentation, which I think sometimes presentations gets in the way of getting stuff done. But sometimes you have to show stuff. So I'm about gallery mode, on and off of presentation so you can see your team in front of you. And then I make sure that everyone has an opportunity to say something. And then when we close out, same, so that you feel like everyone's engaged. And if someone's internet isn't working well, or they have to take their kid to a meeting or a doctor or to a sports game, they'll just have to tell you that in advance and they can be off camera, and that is all okay.
But that's the exception rather than the
rule. Except for on Fridays, of course.
Except for Fridays. Carrie, you know, taking children to doctor's appointments, we know one of the things with the hybrid is it's really been working for a lot of working parents, right? The long commute, it got much easier to manage your whole life while working from home.
Absolutely.
But when other people on the team don't, maybe it's fine for them to be back in the office. And how do you create that sense, again, of empathy, of understanding they're a great participant on our team? How do you foster that empathetic environment when you know somebody else may be grumbling?
Yeah. So first of all, it's always about the one-on-one coaching sessions. And if you're not taking time, again, I don't care how large or small your team is, if you're not taking time to connect with your team to find out where they're at, like what's getting in the way of them getting stuff done, what would help them be more productive, those sort of questions, again, be curious. How's your world going? How's your week going? How's your day going? You know, do you have something that is really important for you to do during the, you know, traditional work hours? Ask questions. Find out what that is. It could be an exercise class. It could be a parent. So there's lots of things that we have in our lives that this hybrid mode has enabled us to be a lot more successful in bringing our lives together. Just find out what that is. And then if you know that one of your team members, that yoga is a super important thing for her, and either every day, which that would be fabulous, I'm jealous of that, at 11 o'clock, she goes and has a yoga, great. Then you just don't call any meetings at 11 a.m. And if a client schedules it, you try and gently say, hey, could we try it for another point? I know Sarah has a conflict at 11 and I would love for her to be able to participate. So there's just lots of things that you can do to enable people. Then when you get together as a team, well, first when you're having your one-on-one, you say to them, do you mind if I share this detail with the team? Like on Wednesdays, you know, you need an hour out. Maybe you don't say why, but you say she needs an hour off. Versus if it's every day at 11, a yoga, you kind of have to say, okay, this is something that's really important to Sarah, is, you know, well-being and health. So we're just not going to schedule meetings among us at 11 a.m. Team good with that? Yes. The more you provide the opportunity for each person to be heard and seen, and then as a team, I'm telling you, they will back each other. They will back each other. It's the sort of thing that just enables a much stronger team.
Yeah. Well, I love that. It's, you know, the individual, then you're having the team conversation. So somebody doesn't think, well, they made it, they cut a deal with this one person. They like that person better.
The only thing I was going to say about in-person, and it may be obvious, but in this world of technology, when you come into a meeting, I try and find ways that people don't immediately put up their laptops, because that's a barrier. If you have to bring your phone in, please just put it on vibrate, put it on your lap, put it on your leg, so that people aren't, you know, when phones could vibrate on the table, everyone knows it's a distraction for everyone. And laptops up are also pretty annoying. If that's the way they take notes, I'm okay with that, as long as they declare that up front. And as much as they can, bend the screen a little bit away, like a little bit down, so they can be typing, but they can still be engaging eye to eye with others. The other thing I like to do is in the room, I like to make sure that we shift our positions. So as a leader, I oftentimes do not sit at the head of the table. I like to sit on the sides. And if I'm just having a one-on-one meeting, or maybe even one-on-two meeting in an office, I will move my, as opposed to being opposed to the two, I will move my chair to the side of the desk so that we're, say, like an L, if you will. There's not a power thing. It's a more we're trying to work in alignment. So again, I think there are lots of, you can call them tips, to make sure that you're engaging with others, not in this power control manner physically, but to enable complete open conversation and work to be done, again, either as a team or one-on-one with others.
I want to dig in a little bit more to body language, which you mentioned a couple times. So Monday to Thursday, cameras on, as a way to build relationships. Can you talk a little bit more about some strategies from the body language that you use, as well as the body language you're looking for, to know, have I lost the person? Are they mad? You know, some things that you're looking for as you're speaking. I mean, you really can't achieve it if you have your camera off. So that goes
yeah, without. So take that.
Well, and I'd love to add to that. And if you see something that's concerning, how do you handle that?
Yeah. So of course, it is a little easier when you're in person to read the full body, because then you can see, you know, are their legs crossed? Are their arms crossed? That is much easier in person, but you can still see some of that on camera. Of course, when there is a lot of this brow furrowing, you know that they're either not following you, there's a question. And so oftentimes, I've learned this over the course of time, just to, I hold my hand up like this, even if I'm not talking. And if I'm not the one talking, it's on Zoom, I will push that button, put that up. And I'll usually say, hey, can we just pause for a moment? It looks like X has a question. Now, I don't say it looks like they're uncomfortable. It looks like they're closed off. It looks like they're mad. I don't say that. I just say, looks like they might have a question. And then I'll say to them, so I'll say, Kim, it looked like you might have wanted to say something. Can I just check in with you? And then you just leave silent for a moment. Mm-hmm. Because you're not using words that they can get defensive to, oftentimes they will open up. I wasn't really following where we were going. This seemed to be a concern. I don't understand how that relates to what I'm doing. Or, well, it seems like we're going down a different path. So that's one way to check in with people. And you can certainly do that in person as well. One of my peers and I went to go see a client. And I had prepped him because he's an East Coaster in financial services, and we were going to a fintech on the West Coast.
And Very different culturally.
Completely. So first of all, I said, no suit, tie, jacket. Don't do that. And I said, everything will be much more casual. Anyway, Michael didn't, at the end of it, really listen. He didn't wear the tie, but he just started to talk. All about regulation, trying to scare this client. So finally, I just said, Michael, looks like Scott has a question. And there was sort of this silence because Scott really didn't have a question. He was like, what the heck is this guy saying? But it was enough of a pause. Michael paused, got to breathe. I think he then started to look at the client's face and body language, which had been my trigger. And he slowed down, he shut his mouth, and it gave Scott a moment or two to pause and actually to say the nicest thing possible, Michael, you're quite an expert. I was really interested in this other thing. And so it did reset the tone of the meeting. I only have learned that trick because I've been in plenty of previous meetings where I didn't have the guts. Yeah. I saw it and I just let it go. And those are disaster for so many reasons. Mm-hmm. Another sort of physical cues are people who are like pulling on their ears or covering their mouth or their eyes. And those are for sure that they're feeling insecure, lacking confidence, kind of uncomfortable. And so you do want to ask again, gosh, it looks like you're uncomfortable. No, just say, it looks like you've got a question. Or what do you think about the path we're headed on? There's lots of ways to kind of draw out with other people for sure. And maybe back to the old one of arms crossed, that is protecting your heart, protecting your core of your body. And yes, it can also mean that someone's cold. So you don't ask, as it looks like you're uncomfortable, you ask a good question. You say something like, how do you feel about where we're headed? Or what do you think about where we're headed? Again, you use the two different words depending on how well you know the person. If you know them well as a feeler, then you ask the feel. If you really don't know where they're, what their personality is like, you say, well, what do you think of her? How did you find? Or something along those lines.
That's such a great nuanced distinction. I have one more question on body language. What's your opinion about mirroring? So if the person's leaning in, do you lean in? If the person's leaning back, do you lean back? What's your opinion?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I generally am a believer of mirroring in a lighter touch. So I don't 100% mimic it. But if they kind of keeps coming to, well, if it's in person, coming keep standing to stand next to me, I'll shift my body and we'll be more in alignment as opposed to face to face. If they're leaning in or leaning back, I'll do it to a lesser degree because sometimes and they're mainly male, sometimes men will lean back, put their, you know, their arms big behind the chairs, kind of legs like right there. And that's power, right? Mm-hmm. And it does look a little weird when women do it, especially if they happen to be wearing a skirt. But there are ways that you can kind of make yourself big if you're sitting or standing and sort of get to a mimic of that without being identical to it. I do find with some people for sure, that's a very healthy technique of making sure that you've got a good interaction, connection going. With some extremes, I pull back a fair bit, but find like whatever is that body demonstration, I find my way to do it is sincere, authentic.
There are some people, not many, but there are people who are like, why are you copying me? I think they see it and they feel like you're so inauthentic. Like, why are you, this is some weird
thing. Backfire
it's like
rather than build
body language. Builds
relationship.
Yeah, it feels inauthentic.
It does. It does. So I think, again, trust your gut. You start to move one way that's slightly mirroring, like leaning in, and the person kind of pulls back. Well, that's just told you there it's kind of weird. But right. For most people, like if somebody leans in and, you know, starts to really download some stuff or really get into it, and you sort of lean forward a little bit too, that's where people are really having a good time with relationships and really getting into the heart of whatever the conversation is. If you kept pulling away, it would just be as odd as maybe overcorrecting on leaning in.
Yes. Again, that fine tuning based on the people you are with.
Absolutely. I think in all things, use your gut. And if it doesn't feel authentic to you, then don't do it because it will come across as insincere and you don't want that.
It's just
at all.
The opposite that you want. Yeah. I always think the other thing that kind of can come up in some of those check-in questions, which I love, is sometimes the person, it's not that they're actually not present and they're thinking about something else or they have something going on in their life that you don't know about. They may not tell you if you're in a team meeting, but they may say, oh, I'm sorry, I really wasn't paying attention. And then you can follow up later to check in with them.
Yeah. Maybe another trick to that too. So if you're in person, it's a little easier to do some of these things. So if someone's kind of, you're not sure where they're at, instead of saying, hey, it looked like you might have had a question, you say, you do a physical shift. And so maybe you stand up and say, you know, I'm going to put some of this on the whiteboard. Or if you've got a flip chart for some reason in your room, you know, let me just jot down some ideas, just sort of physically moving, or maybe saying, you know what, we've been at it for a while. Can we just stand up, take a 5-minute break, then come back? Again, judgment in all of these things. In virtual, some of those physical shifts are a little different, but you can still say, you know, why don't we throw up, maybe I'll share my screen or we'll do some annotations. Let's just get some ideas on the whiteboard real quick. Or maybe you say, you know what, again, we've been at it for a little bit. Why don't we just take like a quick 5-minute break and let's be back at, you know, 10 o'clock, whatever it is. That's just another way of pausing for a moment and making sure that everyone is there and listening.
Pretty effective way to also diffuse a situation if it's gotten a little bit heated. Can you share some other strategies, Carrie, for leveraging empathy if there is a conflict or a difficult situation in front of you?
Yeah, this does take courage. It does take courage. It is absolutely the right thing to do. And anyone in the meeting can do it. However, I do think as the leader of either the meeting or of the team, I would say that that's ultimately my responsibility. But frankly, anyone can do it. So start practicing your empathetic moves. And so if things are getting a little heated, you can use some of those verbal things that say something like, if I'm hearing you right, I think I'm hearing you say X, and maybe you change the words just a little, or you use the yes and, or you say something like, I think I understand where you're heading, and you try and just change the dynamics just a little. Or if somebody has been talking a lot and they are very heated, you'll say something like, Kim, I feel your energy and I feel your passion. So you're recognizing that. I said, let's just pause for a moment. I want to make sure I hear from the rest of the team. Again, using whatever words you feel comfortable with. And maybe the simplest thing to do is to say, Kim, hold on just a moment. I realize that we've been going at it for quite some time. This is obviously very, very important to you. Let's take a 5-minute break. Let's come back. I want to hear from some others first, and then we can keep going. So again, you've not only stopped the situation, diffused it, you've recognized them, that they're passionate about it. You've given the others the heads up that you're going to come and start to ask them for some questions or input. Now, if it's a personal attack, if somebody on the team is personally attacking someone or a client is attacking someone on my team, I'll use the same method. I'll say, you know, Kim, obviously you're very passionate about this. I would love for you and I to continue the conversation. Let's let the rest of the team go for now, and then you and I will sit down. I don't want that to continue in public in front of other people. And then that also allows me to help diffuse them and really get at what is bugging them, because something obviously is off for sure. And there's just no reason for a personal attack in business or in person. So really want to stop it.
What's an example of maybe that you've seen or you've used personally, a really good way to address a mistake that you have personally made in the workplace and you really want to maintain good relationships? What do you do when you know you've messed up? You've messed up.
Royally, there are probably 2 or 3 words that are the most important words to say. And yet in business, there is this bizarre fear of saying them. And they are either, I'm sorry, authentically, sincerely, my apologies, pausing, slow down the voice, deepen it so it feels real. You can also say things like, it's crystal clear we've let you down. It's crystal clear we didn't meet your expectations. It's crystal clear that whatever. Just saying, wow, I am so sorry. And being quiet for a second. I have never been with a colleague or a boss or a client when just pausing and saying that hasn't completely changed the conversation. They stop yelling. They're heard. And then most of the time, what you start to hear things like, I know it's not you or your team's entire fault. Like you start to hear empathetically, like they want to help you. And, you know, we're all human beings. So both personally, I've made some mistakes. My teams have been mistakes. We made mistakes. We've missed deadlines. We have misinterpreted what they were looking for. And the best thing we can say is, I'm so sorry, and pause. And then to say, how can we make it right? Can we work on that together? So all of a sudden, you've said the right thing sincerely. You're not defensive, because that becomes very insincere immediately. And then you say, how can we work on this together? I've got some ideas. I'm sure you do too. Those two words are the most important in the human language, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I think everyone wants to feel seen and heard. And so acknowledging, owning it, if you've messed up, is so powerful. And there's a lot of, I'm sorry,
or overuse of I'm sorry in a way that you're like, this isn't a situation where you need to say I'm sorry. So use it when it's appropriate.
Yeah, I really made a mistake. I've messed up.
Yeah, I really messed up. I made a mistake. And
yeah. And I'd like to fix it. How do I help? How do we work together? How do I help fix it for you? Again, depending upon the nature, you know, is it something personally that I did versus my team? I mean, if it's something personally I did, I better go fix it as fast as I can to make it right and to work with that, again, colleague, boss, boss's boss, or client or vendor, make it right for them.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Harry, last question. This time has gone so fast with you. For those in our community who want to do a bit more of a deep dive on this topic, can you share some resources or strategies that can help us to build our relationship building skills?
Yeah. So I think there's nothing better than experimentation and practice. And if you're in an organization that does have some sort of, whether it's business chemistry or Myers-Briggs or colors or some of the other sort of behavior characteristic, either identifications or training, first of all, really understand yourself and what sort of, when you interact with others because of your strongest trait, what's the downside of that? So first and foremost, know yourself. And then start to look at your team, again, whatever that looks like, or those that you interact with and what their characteristics or behaviors might be, so that you can first and foremost figure out how to work better with others. Then I think it's all about your intent. And so the next meeting you have, ask yourself, how do I want to show up? How do I want to be seen? What do I want to be known for? Those are the questions you ask. Depending upon the answer, then, well, how will that manifest itself by how I show up? What do I need to do differently to show up in that way? And then you kind of flip those questions to your team, your colleagues, and others around you. And then you start to ask questions. You start to make sure you understand expectations better, interactions better. How and when do you work best? I would prefer that when we meet together virtually, that we have cameras on so I can make sure that I understand you, you understand me. Is that okay? Just little tricks, because there are some organizations that tend to be cameras off. And frankly, I don't know how you can possibly have any idea if you are actually engaging with another human being. So those are just some of the practical tips. I'm also confident that by Googling empathy and looking at TED Talks or other YouTube, that you'll see a lot of great, actually even through LinkedIn. And I'm also confident that you too have some materials from others that talk about empathy tricks, inquiry tricks that they can begin to use. Again, this is all enablement of a successful career and getting to the next level and next level, and as a human being growing and developing successfully. And so it's all in the end to really drive our own career success. So hope that they get a practice and experiment. And sometimes it doesn't work out perfect. And that's the best thing if you reflect upon it.
Yeah, right. We're all humans at the end of the day.
Yes,
practice and refine. Doesn't always work when you do it in the meeting, but keep refining the tools that you're using.
I heard also three really powerful questions today that I think anybody, regardless of what level in their career they are, or whether they're managing a team or an individual contributor. Tell me more. How do you feel about this direction? Or how do you think about this? Fill in the blanks. And I think those three are really powerful tools in the toolbox to build empathy in order to build strong relationships for your career.
So. Yeah. And no, I'm going to add one more. Yes, and.
Yes, and.
Yes, and.
Those are four fabulous ones to start to implement immediately.
Well, thank you, Carrie.
Kim and Noah, I loved our time together.
Thank Likewise. I think we'll have to do a part two. This was fantastic. Thank you so much, Carrie. Always a pleasure to connect with you. And for those of you listening,
we will see you all on the platform.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We appreciate you choosing to spend your time with us. If you love this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. If you'd like more information on how we empower professionals mid-climb, visit our website at kahila.com. That's KAHILLA.com.
And as we say at Kahila, step up into your boldest self, and while you're up there, reach down and help another person up.